Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Tom Yorton has been CEO of Second City Works, the business-to-business arm of the Second City, since 2002. Before joining the Second City family, Tom worked in advertising and marketing at agencies like Ogilvy, Gray, and Hal Reiney, before jumping to the client side with stints as a marketing vice president at Sears and 3Com. Second City Works now does more than 400 engagements a year, half with Fortune 1000 companies. Tom and his team are focused on using improv to help companies communicate, collaborate, and innovate better in a web-first, social everything world. He has just co-written a book called Yes And, which explores the improv methodologies that are being adapted by people for work and home. Tom, welcome to Edgewise.
It's good to be here.
How did Second City go from training people for comedy and the stage to applying these techniques in business settings?
Yeah, we found it's interesting because we've been around for 56 years and we found that a lot of the skills that our actors need to be successful on stage translate extraordinarily well into business. And we've been doing that kind of work in an ad hoc way throughout entire history. But I got there around 13, 14 years ago, and we started being much more intentional about applying those skills and those methods to help business people and corporate folks get better at the stuff that they need to do. So it's things like how to listen, how to read a room, how to create something out of nothing, how to work well on teams, how to respond nimbly in the face of failure, all the things that we all know and love, maybe.
We all know, period.
Maybe not love so much, but it's the stuff that separates the stars from the also-rans in business. And so we found that this is a really good, useful, and fun approach to building those skills.
Okay, the title of the book is, of course, Yes And. That's one of the basic tenets of improv is yes, and can you explain what that is and how it works?
Yeah, it could be the granddaddy of them all. It's kind of the foundational thing. So yes, and in a theatrical context, yes, and is you got to remember we're improvising. So there's no script. And when actors are on stage, all they have is each other to resource each other and build something out of nothing that an audience will find interesting. So when there's no script to drive the action, you have to have some way to communicate and build. And so for us, that's yes and, which is simply accepting and building or affirming and building on an idea. So whatever the other actors in the ensemble may think of something that someone says, they don't get to judge it at that moment. They have to accept that and to agree with it and build on it. And it's that simple idea that allows us to create characters and sketches and songs and entire shows. And so we've been creating that way very well for all the years that we've been in business. We found that that method, that approach, also translates well in any facet of your life.
All right, here's the $64,000 question. And believe me, I have personal stories on this as well, but where does comedy fit into the workplace?
Yeah, it's a great question. On the surface, you would think, hey, that can get me in trouble. I don't want to get fired and make fun of somebody, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the way we approach it is, there's a basic thing that we believe in, which is that things are funny when they're true. And when people are laughing, they're laughing in shared recognition of a truth that they all understand. And in business, we often skirt around the truth or we're not fully candid about a situation. The merger that's not going so well, the product launch that tanked, the new policy that's come down from on high that people aren't excited about, that kind of thing. And instead of dealing with those things head on and popping the tension bubble around those things so we can all move forward, typically in business, we skirt the issue and whitewash the issue, and there's a little cynicism that breeds when you do that. So what we like to do is find ways to call out the elephant in the room through humor. And it's not making fun of people. It's actually just holding a mirror up to the organization to allow people to laugh at everything that they're talking about at the bar anyway, when they go to happy hour later on that night. It's all that stuff that doesn't get talked about, that needs to get talked about. Humor gives you a safe place to talk about it.
We interviewed, actually, Scott Adams, I think it was maybe 6-7 months ago, and I brought up this whole issue of, you know, there are people in places where I've worked before that see your cartoons on cue balls, and they're very uneasy about that whole leadership is very uneasy about that. And he goes, well, Dave, I see it this way. It's kind of a barometer for me in his experience. He goes, do I really want to work for a company where there's none whatsoever Dilbert you know, pictures on cue balls, you know, and that's a big tip off to me that I'm not so sure it would be a good place to be. And on the other hand, if you, they're plastered all over the place, you know, that's another indication
that,
you know, what's going on here. So I think what you raise is an interesting point of, you know, let's diffuse the situation. Let's, you know, pinprick the tension and the issue and get to the truth or get to the common understanding as quickly as possible. But that does require leadership to, senior leadership to buy in.
It does. It does. And I think, and I'll make even a more general comment. So I was talking about, you know, dealing with thorny, difficult issues. That's one role for humor. But the other side of it is just, listen, we all talk about employee engagement and getting people to really give their full selves to their work. Well, if you're giving your full self, your full self probably laughs every now and then. There's nothing weird or foreign about comedy or laughter in life. And when it's so funny, when we go through those office doors, we put this mask on that we have to be a business person, and a business person isn't allowed to be playful or fun or irreverent. And that's a dangerous place to be, because it's teaching people that they can't express themselves fully. So again, we're not up for or recommending that people make light of serious problems or failings or things like that. What we're saying is, be willing to laugh at the things that everyone recognizes to be true. And by doing that, you're showing people that you value them fully as humans, not just for what they do on the job.
Now, we're big on teams here at the AMA. You know, teamwork this, teams that, team meetings, whatever. You approach it differently. You use this concept of ensemble. How is an ensemble different, and how can this be applied to the work environment?
Yeah, they're kind of kissing cousins. They're not totally different ideas. They're related. In theater, and in improv theater in particular, we talk about, there's some talk of teams, but we refer more often to ensembles. And there's a couple important distinctions that we like about this. I spent 20 years on the other side of the desk in big companies, and I, like a lot of people who were in those roles, had some bad team building, team bonding experiences. You get a little jaded over it, right? You roll your eyes. So it's a little bit of a tarnished word. So to some degree, team is what you aspire to be, but so often your day-to-day experience doesn't reflect that. So team is a little bit of a loaded term. Ensemble is kind of a fresh term, but there are two other aspects. One, team implies competition. Ensemble implies collaboration. And also, we have this notion by the late, great Sheldon Patinkin, who is one of our early luminaries in the theater at Second City. You've heard of the expression, you're only as good as your weakest link. Mm-hmm. Sheldon had an interesting take on it that we think speaks volumes about how we see ensembles. And it's not that you're only as good as your weakest link, but you're only as good as your ability to compensate for your weakest link. And what that means is, as an ensemble, we have a role. If someone's falling short, then we don't just point the finger and say, I guess we're not going to do well because that person's not doing their job. The onus is then on the rest of the ensemble to pick up the slack and compensate for that weakest link. And guess what? The truth is, we're all going to be the weakest link on any given day, on any given topic. So there's a shared responsibility that is inherent in the idea of ensemble that's a little different than team.
Now, obviously, the risk of failure has a huge impact on any business decision. Now, but in improv, it seems that failure can be a path to success. What are some ways that failure can be used to your advantage as a manager? What's your experience with that?
Well, again, it's the reality of life. We talk about in business, people are going to fail. Things and products are going to fail. Leaders are going to fail. New ventures are going to fail. All that happens. To sweep that under the rug and pretend that doesn't exist is not very healthy. We don't mean that you should go out and celebrate failure and seek it out, but what we say is, let's demystify it a little bit. Let's not give it such power that we're afraid to take any chance, because we never want to contemplate the idea of failure, or when one does happen, we're so afraid to talk about it that we create the very conditions for the next failure down the road because we don't talk about it. So in our world, we fail all the time. The improv set, if you've ever been to a Second City show, there's a two-act show that people pay for, and then there's a improv set at the end of that that's free. We make it free for a reason, because who knows what's going to happen?
You have no idea.
Could be great. Yeah. It could be not great.
Not so good.
And so we set a context for that. We give people what they came for, and then we say, hey, would you like to see some more? Great. We're going to improvise for you now. And so I think companies can learn from that in, what's your third set in a company? What is the safe place for you to go where you can say, hey, for this 30 minutes, we're going to take some chances. We're going to take some risks that we typically, we're going to entertain some ideas that we typically don't entertain. That can't be the way you govern yourself all day long. But if you never create a space for people to take responsible risk, well, you're not going to be very creative or innovative. You're going to get people who aren't engaged, they're just going through the motions, and you'll get a different kind of failure as a result of that.
Sure. Are you a football fan?
I am.
Okay, so it's sort of like the business equivalent of the forward fumble. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it wasn't just you fumbled, but we moved the ball. You know, what did you learn from this? You know, that kind of thing.
Well, you're right, but I get a kick out of it because I was there. I worked for people, and I was a boss. And on good days, I was a great boss, and on other days, I wasn't. And that's just the reality of it.
Right.
And so I don't know what this aversion, it's not healthy to pretend that it doesn't exist. And so that's all we're saying. We understand that failure can have consequences. We aren't thumbing our nose at that. We're just saying you can have a healthier attitude toward it.
And one section of the book describes the follow the follower concept, and it demonstrates how this is aligned with the teachings of the great god of management, Peter Drucker. That we had intimate business relationship with Peter Drucker back in the day. But for those of you who don't know who Peter Drucker is, suffice to say, the man invented the word knowledge worker. You know, he's an amazing presence in the history of management. Now, please explain how follow the follower, how it works, and do you have any advice for managers on how they might try to incorporate that?
Yeah. So we all know the phrase, follow the leader. There's the improv axiom. It's a bit of a twist, follow the follower. And what that implies that, again, we don't, when people are improvising, there's not a top-down hierarchical structure. There's not the leader of the ensemble who initiates every idea, and then it's the job of the rest to support the idea. It doesn't work like a typical pyramid structure. Anybody can lead, anybody can follow. To the audience, it's invisible who the leader or who the follower is. It's almost an irrelevant idea. The only thing that we talk about in our work is that, again, because there's no script or preset idea of where a scene's going to go, it's more important that the ensemble get behind whatever's proposed and support. So follow the follower really is more about the idea that it's everybody's job in the ensemble to be unconditionally supportive of ideas to get them to go to their fullest point. And I guess in a world where we kind of liken it to more modern techniques and knowledge workers and even more recent things, where in a global environment, in a technology-driven environment where the pace of change is greater than ever, where there's more uncertainty and volatility than ever, you need to be able to have teams that come together and disband, and it's not entirely clear on any given day. I'm a CEO of a company, but it's not entirely clear on any given day that I'm going to lead every project. I might be in the rooms offering support, offering ideas, offering encouragement, redirecting. There may be any number of things that I do that it's not always about the leader, quote unquote, driving the action. Follow the follower says that anybody can lead and anybody can follow.
What is the most surprising business breakthrough you have witnessed in your work with clients?
A few. Again, we do so much and we've grown so much. I would say in general, I've been thrilled at how clients have responded to these arts-based approaches to skills building. One, that'd be a general statement. And two things come to mind. One is from the unlikely world of compliance. We create a short, funny video series that's called Real Biz Shorts. And Real Biz, they're 90-second video, kind of YouTube meets the office, meets your code of conduct kind of stuff. And I've been thrilled to see how compliance is usually where comedy goes to die. But we take serious topics and we're able to shine a comedic light on them with Real Biz Shorts in a way that gets people to engage very differently. And in 5 years, we're now in over 270 large enterprise customers. People are inviting us to speak at conferences where attorneys general are speaking. It's like, what in the world are we doing in this space? And the answer is simple, that it's traditionally a space where nobody's been engaged, where people have been bored to tears. And as a result of that, behaviors don't change.
Mm-hmm.
And our stuff gets people to pay attention, which is a necessary thing before you can change any behavior. And so that's a huge change that I've seen, and it's super gratifying. On a much more micro level, on an individual level, we worked with a client who was going to give a TEDx talk. And she was terrified at the idea of giving his TEDx talk. And we do a ton of presentation and storytelling coaching. I just watched the transformation of her from someone who had no confidence in her story to someone who absolutely owned a room. And the magic came, one, from her commitment and her understanding of the material, but also our encouragement and our giving her some improv techniques that allowed her to feel comfortable sharing her own voice and her own story in a much more powerful way. And when you can get someone to have that kind of a personal win in a situation where they felt nothing but fear and loathing, that was really gratifying.
And just to wrap it up here, do you have any quick advice for someone who perhaps their whole life has been afraid to get on a stage or afraid to make a spectacle of themselves or tell a joke or do anything like that? Or, and now they might be put into a leadership position. But, you know, do you have any quick drive-by advice for somebody who just looking to build their confidence or, you know, looking to be more relaxed?
Well, I'd say take an improv class, whether it involves Second City or not. That's a great thing to do. But short of that, you have to practice. All this stuff is about practice. You can read all the books you want. You can attend all the classes you want. But if you never practice, you're not going to get better. Our people are great because they're on stage 7 nights a week. And they're succeeding and failing and everything in between. But they still get up the next day and do it again. And in business, you think about like public speaking, for example. So many people hate that, and so they avoid it at all costs. Mm-hmm. You'll never get any better unless you practice it. You have to kind of face that fear, give yourself little opportunities to do baby versions of it so you can practice and get better. There's no meaningful skill that you've ever acquired in life, whether it's hitting a tennis ball or making perfect pancakes, where you didn't have to try and fail.
Sure.
And so what we say is you got to put it in practice and you have to commit to doing it.
Thanks a lot. We've been speaking to Tom Yorton. He is the CEO of Second City Works. And more importantly, he's the co-author of the book, Yes And, How Improvisation Reverses No But Thinking and Improves Creativity and Collaboration. Tom, thanks so much.
Thank you.
AMA webcasts bring you 60 minutes of thought-provoking insight, specific answers to your management challenges, and conversations with renowned thought leaders. Best of all, they're all free. For a complete schedule of upcoming webcasts, visit the events calendar at amanet.org/events. Here at the AMA, we value your feedback. If you've ever attended any of our webcasts, webinars, or seminars, you've no doubt encountered our feedback surveys. Well, our podcasts are no different. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.